Welcome to the Fantasy Wargaming Podcast. I'm your host, Paul, and apologies for the delay. It's been a bit of a while, becoming a bit of a persistent theme, isn't it? But I'm not alone this evening. No. I'm joined by, as I look out of my window over next door neighbour's fence, there he is, bounding towards me in his mankini, coming towards me. It looks like he's being chased by none other than next door's Rottweiler. Boy, that man can run. All you need is a bit of an incentive. Here he comes, hurdling the fence like a show jumping horse. It's my mate Tony.
I should do it in a Manchester accent, should I? Like a member of Oasis. All right. Oh, no, that's Birmingham.
They all sound the same from the north. Ooh. How you been, buddy? You well?
I thought you were going to do the Rolling Hills of the Chilterns.
I can't see them from my window.
All
I
can see is a house. Well, of course not. You've got a 6-foot fence 20 feet away.
There's a story to that. Have I told you about that story?
You have.
Oh, okay. Fantastic. Yeah, neighbour moved in.
We could stand on windows, maybe see through your neighbour's window.
Potentially. But for those of you who aren't aware the in-house gag, that's obviously a nod to the Paired Weapons podcast by Matt Perris and Kevin Stonebanks. If you haven't heard it, tune in, listen to them. They've been pretty good.
Or just find Smashy and Nicey on YouTube. It's similar.
How is it? Anyway, mate, how you been?
Yes.
Ducking and dodging? Virus free?
Yeah. Chugging along fine.
Good. Been up to much?
Well, obviously, 3.5-4 months since the last episode, I've done a lot of painting of the living room.
I was going to say, you've started another point. Well, you haven't started, have you? You decided to knock out your chimney thingy in the living room,
plastered,
didn't you?
Plastered the holes, took out some vents from the old chimney as well.
You say plastered the holes, you got yourself into a fantastic position and then B&Q closed.
Well, it's not that it closed, it just didn't have any plaster. Yes. Turns out it's important to check before creating a large hole in your living room, during a pandemic, whether there's plaster available. So that only added like an 8-week wait. It was fine.
Excellent.
And then the slow process of me plastering anything came along, but that was done. And then once you plastered that, mate, made everything else look bad. So we had to repair the other walls. And then we actually had to paint it and all the piss it around.
You've managed to do this with kids in the house. Whenever I've tried decorating, I've always managed to banish the kids somewhere else. But kudos to you, mate, for doing it.
But you can't, during a pandemic, banish your kids.
This is
so instead, we just throw them chocolate bars and, you know, computer consoles.
Tell them not to come into the main living room.
It's the summer. They don't want to see their parents. They just want to play Roblox.
I know, isn't it funny? Well, the technology they've got these days. Do you want to go outside and play in the sun? Go out on your bike? No.
It's not funny. You were playing Total War when I got here.
Yeah, I know, but I'm an adult now. As a kid, I was always out and about. I must say, the technology these days. But it is a blessing in some ways. I've just come back from Northern Ireland, and it's hilarious when the children just spend all day on devices and just watching YouTube. And I'll tell you what, the kids managed to finish watching The Floor is Lava. Have you heard of this at all?
I've seen it, but I've seen it on the box, but I haven't actually watched it.
It's all right. It's another TV program. So what I decided to do was introduce them to something of our youth, which was Gladiators. 1992 that started, mate. 28 years ago. So we managed to watch a whole season one. It was quite funny. John Fashanu and Eureka Kaka.
Let's not forget Wolf. Who was the best gladiator
debatable. Debatable. But yeah, I tell you what, it definitely did have some character. But it's just amazing what you can just find on YouTube these days, isn't it? So,
we got Netflix, so we've watched quite a few things. But Spaced was the last one.
Oh, it's brilliant, yes.
Yeah, but there's not much of it.
No.
There's only 2 series.
I know.
The same as Derry Girls. I think there's only like 2 series of that.
And Black Books as well. It's another one.
Oh, there's loads of Black Books, but I've got the DVDs of that.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's good to stay on target.
Yes, sorry.
Stay on focus.
We've wondered already, haven't we? New season of The Boys coming out soon.
Yeah, I know. It does look good.
Sorry, we'll go back on focus in a minute. The thing is, we haven't seen each other in ages, and then we've just caught up for a good chunk of the day. So what's the format? So Mrs. is in Northern Ireland with the kids.
Yep, so mine's at home doing a jigsaw.
Yeah. Anniversary tomorrow.
What, mine are yours?
Yours, yeah. Mine are yours. Oh, dear. I was telling somebody about how we met a while ago. It's got to be, 2002? Anyway, different story. But yeah, anniversary tomorrow.
Yeah, it was Nav. I was in the car, wasn't it?
That's right. Yeah, coming back from that tournament in
you were driving.
Colchester.
The one where you came second, but I really came second.
Oh, controversial.
I mean, you take the prize. I'll just come third, despite having more, you know, victory points than
mate,
you.
Mate, both of us were losers that event. Neither of us won.
Yeah, but I was second loser. You should have been third loser.
Yeah, I should have won it. That's what was frustrating. But it was cracking fun.
Yeah.
But anyway, that's Warmaster for you. If you've not looked into it, Warmaster Revolution is awesome. Find it for free on the internet. Yeah, brilliant. 10 mil scale. Old Warmaster. I know we've talked about it in the past, but it's a brilliant gaming system. But anyway, so we went to that
and
tournament.
And that was the first face-to-face tournament we've been to.
Oh, brilliant picking up some dice and actually throwing them around.
Well, that's the second one tournament of the year for me, I think, wasn't it? Because Scotland and then a one-day Warmaster all the way in Chelmsford.
Colchester. Further north than Chelmsford. Yeah, another 30 minutes on from Chelmsford. You don't realise how far it is until you start driving it, but... When you're desperate to actually play face-to-face games, you'll travel places.
Yeah. So but it was nice.
It was. It was nice and relaxed. I mean, given what's going on with the virus and everything, it was nice just to, one, see your mates and also just push some models around. Because we've been very... I mean, we're very fortunate that UB does exist, and that's Universal Battle for the Uninitiated, which is a computer version of, well, whatever you want, really, so you can port Ninth Age into it. But there's been quite a bit of controversy with regards to the UB dice, hasn't there? I know you
they're
and I've both been, both been struggling.
And it's not like they're... I'm not saying they're just bent one way, but they just seem to only roll ridiculously high or ridiculously low. You don't seem to get so much average.
Yeah, I mean, I partly agree with that. I think the thing is, when I was at the Warmaster event, I was deliberately monitoring my dice rolls. And it was bonkers. If I was playing UB, I'd be saying that they were bent. I mean, at one point, I rolled, I think it was 18 dice, and I got, I think it was between 10 or 11 sixes. And that was me physically rolling dice. Unfortunately, it didn't actually matter too much in that combat because it was so heavily stacked in my favour, it didn't matter. I only needed 3 hits. So it's always the way, isn't it? You get the ridiculous roll when you don't need it. But, yeah, I don't know how much of the UB thing is more... because it always tells you what the dice rolls are and breaks it up. You notice it more. I don't know. But yeah, like you say, there's an algorithm involved. So anyway. So we've been playing the virtual side of things quite a bit, haven't we? But it was nice just to get some actual models and push them around on the table and actually throw some real dice and speak to the person in front of you rather than over a computer screen.
So obviously we played in the Ocho team tournament.
We did.
We have got a chat with the rest of the team planned.
We have.
But we just haven't organised a date for it, agreeing time zones and stuff. So there will be an Ocho episode probably 6 months after the tournament finished.
It doesn't matter. Yeah. It's about the points, which is...
Where you'll get a very vague and loose...
Well, it's more... discussing the actual games doesn't make it... There were so many games, wasn't it? It was an eight-man team event.
Yep.
So each round consisted of us pairing up 8 games worth and then those Absolutely. 8 games playing over the week. And then obviously the results all added up and we'll talk about it more on the show. But yeah.
So listeners, you'll have to wait to see whether we won.
Yeah. And what our name was and what our ambitions and goals were for the entire event. So we'll discuss that at a later date, as you say. But we've also been doing, there's been a couple of UB events, hasn't there? They had the Oco, which was the, or Ocho even, which was the 8-man team event.
Which we just talked about.
I was involved in the first solo UK one, which was
Universal
called...
Universal Baffled, was it?
Universally Baffled, I think, yeah. UB, which was good fun, actually. I took demons to that. Again, the advantage, as we've said with UB in the past, is that you can just, you don't have to have the models. You just generate your army on the computer. So, I generated an army of demons and played with them in the singles event. It was quite good.
And I am currently... I've just finished round 2 of the Brawl.
Yeah. Playing with...
Vampires. VC.
Yeah, VC.
Again, it's an army I've always struggled to play against. So I'm using this as an opportunity to get some games in and find out how everybody else smashes me up.
Yeah, learn the weaknesses of the army as well as the strength, isn't it?
Yes. Main weakness of this army is the player.
Talk about more of that in the team event.
So, thanks to Paul Fernborough and Gareth Willis. It's been my first two rounds. And so I think I lost 9-11 to Paul, and I won 11-9 to Gareth. So two rounds, two cracking games, two nice opponents, 20 points out of two. That's good for me.
He's on par.
If I could, I mean, my sole aim, you know, it would be amazing if I could get 10 points a game average at the end of a tournament. That would be my best result for a while, which is a great shame. Because there are no crap ninth age players, is there?
Well, that's the thing. That's why
I think other people might disagree with that and be looking at me.
There's a couple of chumps on the scene. Fortunately, yeah. They're mostly as I'm going up to this.
I seem to have become one of those. So that is an interest. Now, how we sort this out, because, you know, I've got some experience of playing and I still lose lots. Because I'm not very good. So here's the thing. What if you're a new player? I mean, that must be such a skill jump to come into the system now.
It's a bit different to old 8th edition where you went to a tournament and you could kind of guarantee to play two or three games against people that were kind of a lower skill level.
Yeah, you could get pushed down to the bottom 20 tables and, you know, everybody was clueless. You go bounce back up, you know.
I think it was also to do with the kind of armies people would bring, because the tournament scene was kind of split into multiple different factions of people who
they'd bring their filth, but their sole experience was their three mates.
Yeah, or they'd bring fluffy armies.
Yeah,
like again, use Matt Perris as an example with his elf ship. It was by no means competitive. It was all right, but it wasn't like cutting edge internet sensation taking all the broken filth. It was, these guys look great on a boat and I'm here for a painting trophy.
Well, I accidentally, let's not forget when it was, I turned up to GT once with an illegal list.
Yeah.
But they didn't spot it until round three because I had the Archlector.
Yeah, you weren't taking filth, were you?
Yeah, this I had the Archlector before the book came out with him.
Well, it was the White
and actually,
dwarf,
Jez came over. Goodwin, and said, that's not, you know, part of the book yet, which was a clue.
Yeah, it was a clue in itself.
But he said at the same time, we're not going to stop you, you know, void your results or anything, because we really can't work out why you've bought it.
Yeah, it's not exactly the ideal choice to bring to an event.
And I was, you know, 25 tables from the top. So.
But I think that's the point, is that you had people who would bring cookie cutter lists and do well with them because they had the player quality. And then you had people who would just bring what they wanted for the fun of it, really. And you had a kind of three tournaments in one, didn't you? You had like the top tables, which you would normally see the same faces pushing around the absolute, whatever the cutting edge filth was at that particular time. And then you had mid-range, which was usually ourselves. And then you had the bottom tables where if you were really getting punished, you knew you were going to have a reasonably either good game or an easy game in your final round, wouldn't you?
Yeah, I don't think you get so much kind of gone the now. Chasing the new filth in ninth.
No.
I mean, when a new book comes out, there's a little bit of... But then it's the excitement of a new book.
Yeah.
You know, we only get a couple a year, so actually it is quite exciting to drag out your Infernal Dwarfs.
Yeah,
and get some games in. You know, a lot of people have got them ready to go, or are inspired by the new book to follow it.
Big difference, though, is that when the Infernal Dwarf book lands for ninth, there might be some new units actually in there. So it probably isn't fair for me to say that, but it's not like GW when the new filth, like the Ogre book, would land and everybody was out buying Tusker Cav, whatever they called it.
Not Rhinox
Riders. That's Warmaster.
Yeah.
Mornfang.
Yeah, Mornfang. Suddenly Mornfang appeared.
Mornfang appeared everywhere.
Or
and then
the Empire book where they suddenly found demigriffs lurking around.
Oh, they've always been in that zoo, mate. They've always been there for the entire history of the Empire. They've only just started to ride them now. Exactly that. So there's not that.
So you don't get the cookie cutter, but you also don't get fluffy lists or fluffy players. You don't get someone, or very rarely do you get someone turning up to a tournament who's plays in isolation with a couple of mates.
Yeah, those days are gone.
Yeah. Yeah, I suppose that's it. They're just gone. It's not how it is. You might, chances are, if you come into a tournament, you've probably got a couple of friends who are also at tournaments. So your understanding of the rules will be standardised.
Yeah.
You used to get the little quirks of, you know, whole gaming scenes playing the rules wrong.
That was before turning the internet up to a really tournament took off, didn't
and finding
it?
Yeah. out.
That was us at a GT, wasn't it? That very first, it was like, oh, right, okay, now we play it this way. Yeah. Rules as written, rules as intended, and rules as interpreted by Godbold.
Yeah. More fun our way, we'd win.
Exactly. But I tell you what, actually, whilst we're saying that, that's actually come up recently in that Warmaster tournament we're playing at.
Oh yeah, where they didn't like your rules as written.
But that's what it says in the rule book. Yeah, but that's not how we've played it for the past two decades. But that's how I've just read it. So I actually, when you kind of read the rules and you pull it all apart and you do kind of look further into it, it was actually ruled correctly. But it was good to challenge it because nobody ever has, because nobody's thought of doing it before, because everybody plays it to a certain way, don't they? And nobody reads it in a different way. So it's only when you get to a tournament environment and you've got lots and lots of different people playing, people interpret things in different ways, which is what we were talking about recently about the whole book release and about why it's really good to get these army books out so that they can be kind of put to the test by the community and then revised, which is why the new ID book's been released again. Did you see that?
Yes.
Bit of an update?
I mean, that's one of the big things with GW, wasn't it? When a book went out, that was it.
Yeah.
You might get an FAQ, but they try not to.
Well, 13-page FAQ if you're talking Skaven. Yeah. Do you remember that one? Here's the army book, and here's another book. Fixing all the mistakes in this book.
But if a book's bent, a book's bent. And exactly. There you are, it's at the top of the pile.
Yeah. Whereas the UD can attest to that. They've been brought down a peg or two.
Anyway, so yeah, that's our thoughts on something completely random that we weren't going to talk about.
We were just chatting. Sorry, everybody. It's been a little while.
Your mind's wandering because you are sticking together.
I know. What we've been doing in the hobby.
Warmaster army. I came round. Then we went to B&M so you could get some filler.
Yeah, my filler had dried out.
Once we finished the filler, I found myself with a Stanley knife cleaning up your
Let's go back a little bit. Let's put this into context. So what have you been up to in the hobby, Tony?
Oh, what have I been up to?
Yeah, we'll start with you and then we'll build up to myself.
Let's see. There's my Warmaster Ogres.
Yeah. You got them finished now, haven't you?
Yes.
They look really good.
Although you're probably ruining the timeline of this podcast because we're about to have a couple of cut-ins in this episode where I talk about finishing it, so... No, they're not finished. They won't be finished till the end of the episode. And then once I finished the Ogres...
Time's all relative, mate.
I joined into the Tale of Slow Painters.
Oh, yes, you did.
Yes, with 4 days before the deadline.
Glutton for punishment. Ah, but you had a cunning plan.
Well, I am still working through my pile of shame.
It's not a pile. It's a box.
No, it's not a pile anymore.
And I've showed you
how long
of shame.
Have I been going through my pile of shame? Because I've been doing... This isn't a new thing. I realised I had a problem and I had lots of part finished, hardly started, still sealed projects. And thought, I've got to stop buying stuff and just work my way through this for a while, get it under control.
That's where you went wrong, mate. You just keep buying more stuff and then you put it in front of the stuff you haven't painted.
I haven't really bought much in about 2 years, I think. I mean, maybe if I go to a hobby store and it's an independent one, I like to buy something to...
Yeah, you pick up.
You know, if they're running an event, an occasional model or something that jumps at me, I might buy it, or something I need specifically. But generally, I've only been buying a couple of figures a year for, the last 2.5 years.
Well, I think the other big part of that is because 8th died. So we didn't like Age of Sigmar at all, did we? So there was no kind of real urge to buy a new army. And then when 9th dropped, you were kind of revamping your old lists, your old armies you've been playing with, like Empire
and I had Tinkings. A lot of stuff stored away that could revamp it. Suddenly, knights became good.
Yeah.
I've got loads of knights I can finish.
That's it.
You know, so it's been an opportunity. But, so at the point of the Slow Painters was I noticed I had about a third of a demon army in just from stuff that I happen to have laying about. So I thought that would be a handy opportunity to go into the Tale of Slow Painters. So it's 400 points every 2 months. So the first month, as I'd left myself 4 days, I did a sentinel of...
Nakuja.
Nakuja.
Sloth Demon.
Which is 700 points in one model.
Done.
Did toy about having the second period off, maybe. I mean, I've done 700 points. I can. But yeah, so we're just coming up to the end of the second. End of August will be the second one. And I've converted slash used a load of Hellhounds, which is a combination of the old GW hounds, Chaos Hounds and Demon Hounds.
Hmm. Yeah, the old flesh hounds, aren't they?
Yeah, all metals.
I think the idea of the Tale of Slow Painters is to paint to a high standard, though, isn't it? Is to kind of really, well, not necessarily paint to a high standard, but paint to the highest standard you can achieve, isn't
or
it?
Or leave it to the last week.
Shh, that's not...
But I need a deadline. If I didn't have a deadline, well, I tend to potter around a little bit of this, a little bit of that, so I do need to be driven, and this has been driving me. So, yep, so I should get a couple of units of hounds. Hellhounds finished this month.
That's 360 points.
And possibly a... I've forgotten it. Herald. Is it Herald?
Harbinger.
Well, I'm not sure,
Harbinger
actually.
Of Father Chaos, whatever it is.
It might be a Harbinger, or it might just end up being like a Lemur champion.
Oh, okay. So, what, for the unit?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Fair enough.
Which will probably just knock me to the 400 points. So, yeah, but I did, during this, when I was going through my piles of shame, hidden away, suddenly realised that, you know, when I started consolidating it, because I didn't need much space, I am down to one small box now.
It's not a pile of shame.
Yeah.
That's a box of not enough models.
So I've got some demon, I've already got stuff for next month, the next period of A Tale of Slow Painters. So that's going to be painted fairly soon, and then at that point, really, I've got things. I've got some little bits, just some things that I want to paint rather than have to paint, which will be interesting.
Yeah,
So I'm actually working my way through it.
So do you reckon you'll keep building on this demon army? So what do you reckon you're going to get next?
Well, I'll get to the end of A Tale of Slow Painters. I need to do the core. Well, at the moment I'm down as Myrmidons, but I've been struggling to find any that I like.
15 Myrmidons are good.
Yeah.
Just for the fine extra rank. From
I think
personal
I've got
experience.
Two units as well. So two units of 15.
Oh, okay.
As that my works. Core.
I'm trying to think what I've got at the moment. I think it's 15 Myrmidons, 10 Lemurs, and two units of, I think it's 12 Imps. Has worked really quite nicely.
But I also want to have some Gremlins.
Oh, the Magebite Gremlins are not core, they're special. But they are
I
awesome.
Know, but I quite fancy having some...
You need Venom Sacks.
Well,
the upgrade to Venom Sacks is amazing. We've only gone fives. It just catches people off guard.
I just want them because I want to do the old Nurglings.
Yeah, they're fun.
They're appealing to me. So I think I'm going to get one unit of Myrmidons. I'm thinking of using some Mantic miniatures for that, but we'll see. And then, it will just be onto odd stuff.
Not a fun. Fan of the GW... thingies, or are you just trying to stay off of GW stuff?
I don't like blood letters that much.
No?
I don't think... I quite like Plague Bearers, but I don't like the blood letter miniatures.
Oh, okay.
They're not appealing, but Mantic have got something in there. Abyssal Army, I think it
Abyssal
is.
Abyssal Range. Yeah, I noticed those. They've got Succubi and a Myrmidon equivalent. I don't know what they call them.
Oh, it's actually not them. I think it's one of the special units in it. So I need to get an idea of a scale to make sure they're not going to be too big. But anyway, that can wait.
Yeah, okay. So you are planning to build up. And how many points do you have to get to for this Tale of Slow Gamers?
I think it's like a half-size army, so it's about...
Two and a bit.
Yeah, two and a bit thousand points by the end of it.
Okay. That's a pretty good way of doing it. I quite like the fact that they've introduced that into the scene because, again, there's quite a few painters that are of good quality and it's nice just to, make yourselves time to get projects completed and everything because, like you say, otherwise it can drag on and nothing ever gets completed.
Yeah.
Very easy to get bogged down and stuff, especially when there's no tournaments happening at the moment as well because I'm very much driven by I need a deadline, like Scottish Championships and then TEC and stuff, so... And then with that deadline not being there, my whole result of hobby since we last recorded is, well, now gluing an entire War Master on Dead Army.
That's only because I sat down and started, didn't it? And then you've,
exactly.
You've fallen in line straight away. Going,
I've missed hobbying. The problem
your,
I've had.
Because your wife's away, and I said, well, just set it up on the table, and it's just there, and you can rotate between,
well,
you
this
know,
is
playing
it.
Computer games, watching telly, wanking, and, you know, sticking War Master figures down. Probably
exactly.
Super glue, but yeah. Depends on the order that you do them in.
Exactly. So, but yeah, as you alluded to, because the missus is away and the children aren't in the
is that
house.
Calluses on your hands?
I've only been back for less than 24 hours.
Yeah. You look faint, Paul.
Give it time. Plenty of sugar in the house. So usually because the kids are around and because of the whole blimmin' lockdown thing where the kids have been learning and the house has just basically been lived in. We can't get out, can we? So rather than me being allowed to just leave stuff lying around, the house is much smaller than it normally is because you're constantly in it. Where I had like dedicated space and time to do my modeling and my hobby in the previous times, I've just not had that. I've had to put it away every time. And it's really, well, you just lose your motivation. It's like, look how much I've managed to achieve in this evening because
you
I don't
just
have to worry about kids.
Mr. Motivator.
I did. I needed you to walk in through that door, tell me about your box of shame, and then I said, that's not shameful, look at this.
Your cupboard.
Pulled out my
and
cupboard.
As long as that door stays closed, you'll stay happily married.
That's it. Oh, yes. This is it. It's like every time something new comes out, it's like, yeah, I've had this for years. Honestly, it's in the cupboard. It hasn't just arrived through the post. What are you talking about? No, I must say, actually, she knew about the undead because this was my
well,
birthday
there's
slash
knowing,
Christmas
Paul,
present.
And then there's knowing.
Yeah, she wasn't
I think
quite aware
she
of
knew
what I
bought. That you'd bought some undead figures.
Yeah.
I'm not sure she knows that you bought the Ragnarok level Kickstarter, that even people at the Warmaster tournament were taking the mickey out of you.
Yeah, but you
for single-handedly kickstarting a miniature range.
You need to have variety in an army. And
variety
I'm a firm
isn't
believer.
Having 8 units of everything.
It is. I might want to play with 8 units of cavalry in a 2,000-point game where they cost 100.
Yes, but you've got 16 units of cavalry, haven't you? You've got 8 of horsemen and 8 of dogs.
Oh, yeah, you can't count
you
dogs
can
as cavalry.
Fully, well, you can't, though, because you have to follow the army list. But.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. But no, I mean, I deliberately bought it so that I could upscale it to 3,000-plus points if I want.
You deliberately bought it so that you could lay it out on a table and cry a little bit when you realise you've got to paint it.
This is
why I never ever buy a whole army at once.
It's the fact it's undead. There's just so many units. But my plan is contrast paint, my friend. Contrast paint. At this scale, I'm hoping it will work.
The holy ground. Oh. No, the holy grail, not the holy ground.
But no, this is going to be my test case because I'm thinking 10mm is small enough that you can try it on it, and if it doesn't work, and people won't really see it. But also with it being undead as well. What's the contrast paint called? Skeleton Horde. That's apt, isn't it? So I'm going to give that a go. I tried the red contrast paint actually on my Squigs for the for my Ninth Age Warriors army. Squigs in a Warriors army. Using them as wretched beasts. And it came out okay, but I wasn't that enamoured because I was using it on the Wrecking teams,
yeah,
you know, the Mangler Squig equivalent, and they were just too big. The it didn't work. The contrast, but it would have worked, but not to the standard I wanted it to. So I ended up highlighting it up. But I'm hoping at such a small scale at 10mm contrast paint will do the job.
But do you
That's
think it's our expectation? You know, it's a bit like Dip, isn't it? Dip was great if you were the type of person, and I used to use Dip badly. And the reason I use it badly is that I'd base coat it. Dip it, varnish it matte, go, that's quite nice, and then stick on 4 highlights and a shade.
And some tartan.
Yeah, and some tartan.
Exactly, yeah, it's about the level that you want.
You know,
to.
And so you think, well, actually, I'm losing out the advantage of using a dip, because a dip's great if you can just get the right dip, you
just
know,
dip
the
it.
Right. Yeah, dip it, varnish it, walk on. If you're not. So that's the reason I haven't invested in contrast paints, because I think, well, I'll still end up highlighting them and mucking about.
And it'd be interesting to see what I do here. Because with the, again, I know we keep talking about 10mm at the moment, and this is a predominantly 28mm, but just with contrast paints in particular, just with the orcs, with the green skins I painted up, I wanted them to come to a reasonably good standard. And I still found it was like a base coat, layer, highlight.
Yeah.
And that's on 10mm. So you're like, well, I can't do
because you know that highlight is what makes it pop.
It does.
And if you stick a, wash or a shade on. That's what gives the paint that second, you know, the paint job that second look, because you've got depth.
Oh, well, that's true. I mean, in some cases, actually, I look at the wash as a layer all by itself.
Yeah, you
so use base it coat, as layer, highlight, wash, highlight again. So what's that, 5 steps? But I just found that that always seems to give me the definition I want for a 28mm model. So I'm just trying to do... I mean, the idea with this Undead Army is I want to do it quick and fast. I want it to look good. I want it to look reasonable. But like you said, it's like with those Skeleton Warriors, I could spend ages on them, but it's 24 stands of the Blighters.
Yeah.
So I won't be able to do that this year.
And you've got 24 stands of Graveguard when that's finished.
Exactly. And 24 stands of Zombies. It seems to... Yeah, it'll be a never-ending story, never-ending horde. So that's my plan, Batman. The idea
so
is
does this mean
paint.
No Ninth Age stuff on the immediate painting horizon?
So I broke myself with the Ninth Age army that I want to use this year, which is the Warrior/Orcs, and they're done. There's a few things I want to add to the army eventually. Like there's, I've got a Lord on a Behemoth, which I'm using as the big Cabbage Wyvern. I don't know if I want to do that, though. That model doesn't really appeal to me at the moment. And there's a few other small projects I want to do, like how do I wangle Feldrax into an orc themed warriors army, and I don't think I can. But no, otherwise.
But they're the filth. You've got Feldrax.
They're the current filth. I got two elders, but the yeah. I was looking at a Feldrax ancestor as well the other day after Rasmus was playing them in the Ocho. There's some appeal there. But no, long story short, I mean, what I'm hoping to do next with Ninth Age is do some terrain, going through my man cave of shame. I've got quite a lot of old GW buildings in there and quite a bit of terrain and stuff that, I don't know, I just want to make
some
proper
terrain.
Because
you really wanted the farmyard, didn't you? Like the,
I've got it, yeah.
I was going to say, you were after that for ages, you got it?
Yeah, I've got it, but I've still not put it together yet.
Because for ages you were saying how you were scared. You only wanted it when they stopped selling it.
Yeah, always the way. I want it. Can't have it. But I want it more.
Yeah.
Exactly. And then Jim got it. I was like, Jim, my friend. My friend. And he also had the other, you know, the Fulcrum sets. They came as two sets. They stopped selling them, didn't they? And I wanted the other set. And he just so happened to have the Manor House and the Fulcrum. And... being a good lad, he also gave me a heavy discount on those. I was most delighted. Thank you, Jim. productsforwargamers.co.uk.
Sorry, is that the same Jim that we're talking about?
Yeah, it's the same Jim. I know. Always gives you service with a smile. In-house joke. But yeah, so no, I've got those. But what I want to try and do is do some proper Ninth Age scenery. Because I know we've discussed this in the past. Scenery really does make a table come alive with really good painted models. And...
Well, you've been focusing on your attention on trees, haven't you? And I've watched a lot of tutorials, mostly on YouTube, watching Luke's APS or whatever it is, Luke's.
All right, what's he been up to?
Well, he's a terrain maker.
Oh, is he?
Yeah, he does like commissions.
I'll have to have a look at that.
That's his business. God, Luke. I know the business is called Abe because he sells all the products that he uses.
Oh, okay. Does he do like dioramas and stuff?
No, he does like commission, well, tables and like set pieces, but it's nearly all commission stuff.
Okay, fair enough. I mean, what I really want to try and do is achieve, like, what I did with my Warmaster terrain was really go to town with it, and then I put it on templates so that whenever something moved into the terrain, you just took the terrain piece off and the template was 2D underneath.
Yeah.
So you could move through it, which works really well for Warmaster, and it would work really well for Ninth Age as well, because ultimately you don't really use, you don't go through the terrain that much apart from woods and ruins, obviously. And there's a few others, obviously, you do utilize the terrain, but for the most part, it's just looking pretty on the table. And unfortunately, a lot of the games I play, the terrain really isn't up to par for where I would like it to be. So like what I did with Warmaster, I just want to do the same thing with Ninth Age. But I just want to build some proper-sized trees.
Yeah, I mean, Luke's APS is the YouTube channel, and he's done quite a few over the years on trees.
Okay, I'll have to have a look into
of
that.
Of varying scales, and some of them quite big. I think he was looking at, like, 300mm high trees.
Oof, okay.
As a large, you know, as a... and then bringing it down, you know, variation and various sizes and techniques and budgets.
Yeah.
So have a look on that. But yeah, because this is something we discussed before, because essentially in the fantasy world, it appears they only have domesticated fruit trees.
Exactly.
Of kind of up to 8 metres height.
Yeah, they're not very tall compared to you and I at all, are they? When you think about it.
Maybe in Warmaster sometimes they've got the great sequoias, the giant oaks of 28 mil trees deployed in 10 mil gaming.
10 mil gaming.
But in 28 mil stuff, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, yeah, in 10 mil, we might have accidentally got the right scale sometime. So, but now, yeah, this is something we've talked about before, because if you, 3rd edition Warhammer, the hardback, with full it wasn't full colour, but it had colour pictures in various points, and they went to a table, and along one edge, and this would have been 1980s.
Back in the day.
Yeah, and they had, you know, because there wasn't like set terrain, the bloke who'd made the table thought, well, how big should the trees be? So there's this forest coming in, and all the trees are about 300 mil, 350 mil. Wow. Because he's done them relative. They looked amazing.
That's what
But the whole game did as well. It was fields and massive armies pushed together, and given it was 3rd edition Warhammer, they'll be on about turn 5 by now.
But I was going to say, the other big driving behind that was campaign this year, wasn't it? Which was going to be in May, but obviously with COVID and stuff, it's been postponed, I think. It's the same weekend, actually, as TEC.
Which we've both signed up
for. So you get yourself signed up. Oh, I think there's already a waiting list for that. And with COVID being the way it is, who knows what's going on. But we've got our hotel booked and we're ready to rock and roll. So... looking forward to going to that. But yeah, the idea was just really promoting the hobby is by making people come over to the table and go, ooh, what are you playing?
But
and a big part of that is the terrain you're playing on.
Just because it's been postponed this year, I mean, we should really, the knack is to start now so that there isn't a push.
That's it. You know me though, mate. I need a goal.
You can think about it for 6 months.
It's miles away.
Yeah. Come March next year, we'll both be desperately...
Well, you were. How did you get on with your big tower thingy you were building? What was it? Was that GW kit, wasn't it?
Yeah, is it the Mage Blight?
Pretty big.
Yeah, but it's all base coated, and I've put it to one side. You know, I spent
with
a couple of evenings. It is with the dragon, actually.
Staring at you.
Which I keep looking
at. One day, you'll finish me. One day.
Yeah, yeah. Whatever I do, I keep looking at it and thinking, well, that was going to be the next project. But then this Tale of Slow Painters came along, and so he got pushed back. But he's going to have to be, dragon's going to have to be finished, along with Mage Blight, so.
Yeah, because that tower look awesome.
Yeah.
On a big table. I mean, that's the thing. I think... it's very easy to get stuck into like 4,500-point games sometimes, isn't it, with ninth? Because that's what it's kind of designed for.
It is very easy if you know if we want a 3-hour game, 3.5-hour game.
Exactly.
You say right, well, 4.5K. You know, roughly the amount of terrain you get on a terrain map. You know, throw it on and away you go, and we know we'll be finished in a few hours.
It's a bit like, for example, the terrain maps. I still don't understand why there's just a random wall in the middle of the thing. It just doesn't make sense to me.
If you wanted it to look nice, you just put a road along next to that wall. It has no influence on the game, does it?
Yeah, exactly.
But it then gives you the setting for the terrain.
Yeah. But I think what would be really cool is having a table that actually not only just looks cool, but also works to the terrain. It works to the rules of the game. So, yeah,
it is playable.
Yeah, and it's playable. That's the key thing, is playable. So having the templates underneath, I think, is a big thing. So you can actually take the thing. And also it defines the actual boundary of the terrain as well, which I think is really important. I think there should always be boundaries on terrain clearly marked.
I mean, the current terrain rules are a bit stripped back from where they used to be. You know, buildings are impassable, etc.
Yeah.
Now, that's the core rules. Have you considered using the terrain rules, you know, the building rules, etc.?
I haven't even seen those.
Oh.
Whereabouts are those?
There's a terrain supplement in downloads.
Is there really?
Yes.
I have not read that.
It's a bit before the additional Magic Arcanum.
Oh, I saw that.
Oh, yeah.
Mental Magic.
The Olympic Games installment.
Yeah.
You seen that one?
The Olympic Games installment.
Yeah, there's a simplified games arena.
No,
set of rules as well.
I'll have to have a look at some of these.
You know, next time you get in an army book, go up and down a little bit and have a have a tweak, have a little look.
You talked about look at other army books.
See if there's anything.
Next, you'll be telling me to read the full army book with all the fluff. Pa, pa.
Or how to use your pin vice.
So many years of doing it with my fingers, thinking, oh, if only I could make it smaller. And it was in the handle all along. Woe is me. Oh, I did not realise that. But yeah, I mean, the thing is, there's so much to do in this hobby, and there's so much people can take from the hobby rather than just... I mean, I do enjoy playing the game, obviously, and I do enjoy trying to win, but a lot of it is the visual impact it can have. So I think a good terrain, good table worth of terrain is definitely well worth it.
See, when we used to play the big games at GW HQ, or the, Mark's birthday or one of those, or like the campaign demo game, which, although it was about... a demo game at a convention in front of the public, we always ended up having a game that we enjoyed, didn't we?
Oh,
we're going to make this look good by writing a set of stupid rules and playing with monstrous fulcrums, playing with magic fulcrums and massive armies and...
Loads of giants.
Loads of monsters. And then at the end of it, everybody turns to a frog and we all lose.
Yeah. Yeah, draw. What was that? It's like watching cricket all day, isn't it? What's the purpose? Actually, this is more fun than cricket. But no, you're right. But I think a lot of the draw from that for people coming over and taking a look was the big models on the table. I think what really benefited it was even at GW's own place, I was quite disappointed at the standard of the terrain. But then you can't expect them to put high quality terrain on the tables because people were even nicking the trees, weren't they? Yeah. Do you remember that year we went and all the trees were super glued down to the base because the previous year people had just been nicking trees off of the tables. So, I think you and I have both got the same dream of having a really nice table. So, and obviously set the precedent with Warmaster. I've got a really good set of terrain for that now, which I will use for years to come. So,
we've got quite a snazzy terrain set up anyway, haven't we? We haven't got...
Yeah, between the two of us,
we've got at least... game centre or above level.
Oh, easily.
Terrain.
I want more though. I want a higher level than that. I want, like, for example, we've both got the Garden of Moor sets, both painted to a reasonable standard, but I'd like to do something with those. Like, I'd like to set them on terrain pieces in their own right and put terrain around them and stuff, and, do you know what I mean, really make them a centrepiece of the table.
Yep.
And I just haven't done that yet. We just kind of used them as pieces and then make them impassable on the table. And they look good, but it's not what I'm looking for.
Yeah.
So, to come back to your question, what am I planning to do for 9th next? Probably terrain, mate, I think, is my next focal point.
And to commit you to it, because in 3 months we might record another podcast.
Yeah.
Actually, we're not, though, are we? We better get the Ocho.
Yeah, wait, we need to
ignoring
get
the Ocho episode...
It'd be you Christmas, know,
yeah, yeah. When we do the Christmas episode, which will be our next normal one at our current recording rate, what terrain are you going to have done then?
Well, I want to focus on the trees.
I think that's a good starting place.
I want to get the woods done because you always.
I think where the trees are at the moment, where woods are at the moment, is there's an acceptable standard that is achieved from, some fairly basic products that you see replicated pretty much at all game centres and on all reasonable tables.
Hmm.
Very rarely is it exceeded.
Yeah, agreed.
Quite often it goes down, doesn't it? One tree on a...
if you're lucky.
Yeah.
Recent tournament I was on, it was a piece of cardboard with a solitary token on the top of it saying that's a forest. I was like, oh, okay. Interesting. But, I don't know. For me, a lot of it is the immersion of the game. I love it. And I just think, the thing for me is when you invest in an army, when you invest in terrain or whatever, you only have to do it once. And then you can use the same terrain game after game after game, can't you?
Yeah.
Really? I think that's where it's at. So, and then who knows? Maybe I might do kind of specific theme terrain for like my Warriors army, which is set in the cold. set in the ice. Who knows? Don't know. I'm not going to stretch myself to too much. But yeah, I just basically want to get
some trees.
I want to get some good trees.
And you used the plural. So there must be at least two by the next time.
I want at least three woods. That's what I want to build. Because generally tables have between two to three woods, don't they?
Yeah.
And if we want to upscale the game to a bigger size, like we do several times a year, you're going to need two to three sets of wood.
So I don't want to go on too strong because you'll only bring up that sodding dragon again. I think I'm in year three of painting it or something, year four maybe.
Project,
yeah.
That's what it is. That doesn't fit in your box of shame, doesn't count, does it?
Yeah. So, yeah. He could go up next to Cthulhu on the bookcase. So.
Is that dry yet?
Yeah, probably. Sodding Reaper bones.
Oh, fantastic material, that tacky. Oh dear, the amount of flashing on these zombies, mate.
Yeah, so we're still production lining out your Warmaster stand. So you're cutting the flash, aren't you? And I'm covering myself in poly filler.
Doing well, mate. I can't believe you got it on your face earlier. I'm not sure how it got there.
That's how hard I'm working.
furiously working, so it's splashing back on you. So what's next, mate? Word from the doctor?
Let's have a word from the doctor.
Hi, and welcome back to Just What the Doctor Ordered. I have a simple suggestion today to help you all with your magic phases. This rule is to help you decide how many dice to use when you're casting or dispelling, and it is the 3-2-3-2 rule. Very simply, assume the first dice you roll will score a 3, the second one will score a 2, the third one will score a 3, and the fourth one will score a 2. Hence, 3-2-3-2. As an example of the rule, imagine you need to score 7 or more on the dice in order to cast a particular spell. So the first dice is a 3, so one dice obviously isn't good enough. Second dice is a 2, so the first two dice is a total of a 5, still not enough. And the third dice is a 3, so that's a total so far of an 8. So 3 dice is probably the right amount to use to cast this spell. Like all such rules, this is not perfect, and there are times it should be broken. But I think it provides a sensible approximate guide to choosing how many casting and dispelling dice to use. So, the 3-2-3-2 rule. That's just what the doctor ordered. Thanks, and take care.
Three on a dice. My average is 2.5.
Yeah. Well, that's what we're saying, actually, because it used to be the joke that 3.5 was the average,
not for
and
us.
2.5 was the Tony average.
Yeah.
But that results in a similar approach, doesn't it? That actually it was, 75-80% of the time we'd get it spells off based on 2.5.
Yeah. And that was what we always went with, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Because I was always of the motto, if you aim to basically roll lower than you think you're going to, you're not too... I'm still disappointed when I roll 3 dice and don't get an 8. It still really bothers me. But that's because I know what the odds are.
Yeah.
But if I really wanted that spell to go off, I should be rolling 4 dice at it, shouldn't I? That's the thing, because an average of 2.5 puts me at 7.5, and I'm not making it.
Yeah.
So, so it does work.
So 3-2-3-2.
Thank you, Dr. Dan. Appreciate that. Oh, sorry, are we still declosing? No, I think it's pretty obvious who he is.
Yeah.
So what's next then, Tony?
Shall we have some background?
Ooh, so is this one of your fluff readings?
It is, and it's from the Warriors book, and it's about, as we mentioned earlier, the filth is obviously all about Feldrax now for certain players.
Yep.
I believe a certain podcast celebrity, who we won't name, we'll just call him Wafu Meris.
Yep. Nobody will break that code, mate.
No. Not without an Enigma machine. We've got that one saved. But, recently took 3 units of Feldrax, wasn't it, to a tournament?
Yeah, they are strong. I don't know what it is at the moment with the book, but they do seem to be a very strong choice.
I mean, magic-wise, Pyro and even Alchemy, the rerolls kick in, and it's difficult to quantify what sort of effect, and they just kick out damage. Anyway... Yeah. But more interestingly, they're fantastic models, so I don't mind.
Yeah, no, I agree.
I think maybe if they were like zombies, you'd be a bit, really good.
For years, they've been the whipping boy, haven't they?
Yeah.
They were never very good in the past, but now, if you've got a decent Feldrax selection, use them!
So, go brilliant. For it. Anyway, so, here is the The Feldrax.
A fluff reading by Tony Hale.
Me. Feldrax Elder and Feldrax. When we last spoke, you said something was troubling me. I couldn't speak of it. I have never told anyone of this, but I thought perhaps once we had parted, I could write it down. It is a grave thing, a thing that weighs like chains upon my soul. Before we first met, I plied my trade up the coast of Selexia. I was lazy and a wastrel. You'd say I still am, and I was a poor hand. I was paid badly and treated worse. I lived from berth to berth. I never told you how the Dawn Star was wrecked at sea and how I was washed ashore on the Shattered Isles. I've never told you what happened there. We were taken by the natives, a wild people, light, dark, old, young, all of them worshipping the dark gods. At first I thought them mad, though I did my best to blend in. Later I realised they had real power. They sought more, however, and I, now part of their band, rode with them to the next island, where a tribe of Feldrax lived. We dragged our boat ashore and crossed the beach. The towering bones of great sea beasts covered the beach, a foreboding presence as we trekked towards the Feldrax camp. My whole body froze when I saw them. They were enormous, each the size of a house. Their lower bodies were reptilian, with four enormous legs. From above their front legs grew a huge torso like that of a scaled giant. They had heads like ogres and great burly arms. Rumour claimed them to have once been wings and tipped with clawed hands. Their dwellings, each the size of a castle, lay half submerged in the jungle floor, with sloping roofs constructed using whole tree trunks. We were led into the hut of the elder. She was a particularly large Feldrax, and her dwelling was built against the cliff behind the camp. As we walked down into the earth, she turned her head towards us. Behind her, lit by massive fires, along the walls were a mural, picked out in 1,000 bones from those shorter than my arm to great spars of the leviathans washed up on the beach. It showed the mightiest of their kind, poised in mythic stances above all manners of winged creatures. Before this display, I recalled the legends of Feldrax spread across the ports along the eastern coast, tales of the wasteland of other places poisoned with magic. Issuing forth from these twisted lands, the Feldrax hunted anything that could fly. This gave credence to the rumour that they were descendants of dragons, that flight for them was some ancestral memory that only provoked a blind rage for what they had lost. The elder listened to the entreaties from our tribe, weighed them, but would not agree without tribute. They would join us if we proved ourselves worthy and assisted them against the harpies of a nearby isle in battle. Our leader could barely restrain herself as she barked her assent. We rode to the island, used as a nesting site by the harpies, the Feldrax swimming alongside us. Harpies nesting cave in the rocks. In flight they cannot be caught by the Feldrax, and their holes are too small for them to enter. Under cover of darkness, we strung nets over the top of the holes and waited. As dawn broke, we climbed into their caves and began to flush them out. Harpies are fearsome creatures on the battlefield, but poor fighters in enclosed spaces. The scene was chaos. Trapped low to the ground by our nets, the harpies were forced to fly sideways into the waiting arms of the Feldrax. Many circled in their central space, while a few hands began to claw at the netting above them. I saw one flying right towards the elder. The harpy feinted right and flew left, but the Feldrax was faster still, snatching it cleanly from the air. I don't know what I expected her to do, but once she held the harpy, I could see she was visibly shaking. She held it between three of her claws in her left hand, its tendrons taut beneath her scales, her other hand hovering in the air. Then she began to break its wings. I cannot describe it here. You could picture a creature that size, the size of a house, torturing a creature like you or me. The blood, the breaking of bones. I vomited, I soiled myself, and I fled the place. I threw myself into the sea and hoped to die. I do not think all the oceans of the world could cleanse me of that sin. That was from In the Letters of Aaron Fisher, from his friend Jacob Summer. And that was written by Nathan Young, who was one of the writers of the Warriors of the Dark Gods book.
And there you go. It was a lovely dramatic reading by Mr. Tony Hale. Thank you, good sir.
A classic. But I think it's worth appreciating what the background team does. It's very easy because, oh, let's face it, we're all rules focused.
A good majority of us who play at tournaments are, yeah.
Well, it's a game. So, you know, there's... But somehow that game isn't the same without having... Well, like you were saying, it's set in the immersion, it's set in the terrain. And part of that is the background and the story. So, yeah.
And I think that there explained Feldrak's hatred of flyers, if we didn't know it already. Don't forget, it's caught me out in a couple of games. So, yeah, so that's that. So, obviously, our last conversation, sorry, a conversation we had on our last podcast actually resulted in two emails being received.
Two!
Which I thought we'd have a quick discussion. One was from a Mr. George Teat, who told me to treat it as urgent, who was telling me that he's got here, mate, £6.5 million that he wants to the bank wants to confiscate it, and he wants to pass it to us due to our fantastic podcast. I've politely responded to him, telling me, well, I've given him my bank details. Is that all right?
Yeah, why not?
I thought that'd be a nice little splurge. The second one was
actually, send it in a postal order, please?
That'd be nice. Check made payable to Godbold. Done. The other one was from a chappie who he shall remain nameless, just because obviously he hasn't given me permission to share his email, and I'll only go through the premise of it. But obviously, last episode we tried to be as fair.
So on that, we'd just like to say thank you to him for
emailing us in the first point. Yeah. Well, carry on.
No, that's what I was going to say.
Okay.
It's nice to get somebody else's view on our rambling, isn't it, really?
And we try to be as fair as possible, obviously, in our... It's all just personally our points of view, and obviously, as we've stressed multiple times, we're very appreciative for the amount of time and effort that people put in for free to bring this hobby to life for us. But obviously, one of the things that I was really quite pushing was more for was more transparency from the rules writing, especially in the early days. But what this chap's here obviously mentioned from the inside knowledge is just the amount of abuse the team would receive for just putting forward slight changes and tweaks without them being play tested. And I obviously thought, really? Okay. Really? I wouldn't.
So this isn't the books being released or a preview of a book?
No, this is purely just bouncing ideas
around.
Beta
version of the book.
Yeah, this is purely just bouncing ideas around and talking about how certain units might have certain abilities or what a potential name of a magic item might be, that kind of thing. And they were just obviously feeding back, just saying, unfortunately, there's a significant chunk of the community that just take things far too seriously without respect to certain members of the team. And
no, you shock me.
Yeah, being too open and transparent, as this guy was saying, was just leading to nothing moving forward, because nobody's ever happy about everything, are they?
My better half, the lovely Barbara, who does listen, and she's the apple of my eye. Yeah, that's it.
She is wonderful, mate. Wonderful.
Well, we can say what we want now. But I think she was always shocked when there was a tournament and then there was a so-called gate, you know, an incident.
Yeah.
A war, you know.
Hail gate.
The concept that there could be uproar over something, over anything at a wargaming tournament was a...
There were some good ones, weren't there? When the screaming bell panicked and fled off the table, despite being immune to psychology.
Yeah.
And his opponent knowing that full well. Anyway, that's what you were saying. there's been some great gates. But yeah.
Cheating gate or running away with all the money gate.
Ooh.
Allegedly.
Allegedly.
Well, as long as we don't say it.
Yeah, we won't have to go on and formally apologise and then read out a statement.
Don't know what you're talking about.
Anyway, so no, we just obviously wanted to say thank you again for obviously bringing that to our attention, and just obviously, unfortunately, as you say, it's just one of the negatives of the community. There's an awful lot of positives out there, and we just want the game to keep growing and But yeah, I think it's reaching that happy medium, isn't there? I mean, the main thing is obviously just behind the scenes, as it were. We're now receiving emails from the rules team with regards to potentially early access to the ID book, and other books to come. So it's, again, it's like all things, it's an evolving project, isn't it? So not that we'd bring out an episode.
Sorry to dash it for enough. You though, but isn't the ID book out?
No, the full book, mate.
Oh, the full book.
This is just.
I thought they were just leading you on, mate. I thought, yeah. We'll keep him happy. But it's and like version 2 of the rule book, I heard.
No, that ain't changing. But there are, obviously, there are other books in the pipeline that the ones that we obviously know about, which everybody knows about, I'm sure. Things like the Dark Elves are next, aren't they? And then after that, who knows? I know there's rumours.
But have we not ascertained that you're not currently aware of the books on the download list?
Yes,
let alone ones that haven't been released yet.
Exactly.
I mean, they're
far too hard, mate.
The magic.
I don't have time for that.
I thought the magic and the terrain ones sneaked in, you know, quite low profile, really.
They did. It's a shame there wasn't more of a fanfare on those. They were in the Ninth Scroll, though, weren't they?
Yeah.
Which is, I must say, I've been reading that every time that drops. Our good friend.
Always do.
Henry P. Miller. Thanks again.
Good luck with the polo, Henry.
Yes, indeed. So, that's a good part. Again, if you've not seen the Ninth Scroll, take a look at it. It's free to download on the website, and it's fantastic for background. They always get a little sneak peek, don't they, of something new coming.
Yep.
So, it's a bit reminiscent of the old White Dwarf of old, to be honest, which was the GW equivalent.
I think it's great, actually, and I think the variety of articles and the fact that Henry makes sure that there's a range. So there's hobby. There's painting, there's previews, there's a battle report.
Yeah, it just helps to build. I mean, the thing is, right, I'm playing Warhammer Total War at the moment, which is an amazing game. Again, if you've got a PC and you're able to play it, buy it, because it's amazing. But the amount of depth and scope and just fluff and character that GW are able to create and then subsequently destroy callously. Anyway, obviously, Ninth is only, it's relatively new in comparison, but we've got some real talent who are working tirelessly for free to build us a whole new community and a whole new history. And from what I've already read so far, it's pretty impressive.
Mm.
So the Ninth Scroll is definitely the place to tune into and download that and start getting is it monthly or six weekly? A more reliable dose than what we provide.
that's not difficult.
For free. Hey, all I can say, mate, is during lockdown, I didn't get any free time. I don't know about you, but I was one of the fortunate ones, I suppose, where work has just exploded. So for me, this is the first time I've done any proper hobby for months, and it feels great.
How is life as an undertaker?
Oh, it's harsh. No, property management, it's perfect. It's brilliant. It's lovely. It's growing from strength to strength. But anyway, what's next?
I don't know.
We got your little hobby diary, which I shall either insert here or just flawlessly edit this part out.
Jolly good.
This is the third instalment of Tony's Hobby Push. As per the previous podcast, I'd already started splitting into reasonable size groups to tackle, and I'd talked a bit about base coating. I tend to base coat slightly lower than the mid-range, just slightly darker colour, and then highlight it up. But before I start the highlighting, I normally use a complementary wash. I used a limited number of washes on any figure. But obviously that colour, that wash colour does have to be complementary. So I might do any browns and flesh and hair and whatever all in a brown or wash or ink. But things like green, yellows, that sort of thing, you can't use a brown. So you need a colour that works. Colours like red, you might get away with a brown, or you might get away with using a proper red. It very much depends on your final colour. So, yep, really, for rank and file, I don't shade individually. I just base coat slightly darker, and then bring out that detail with a wash, a complementary wash in a suitable colour. I've got a random mix of wash materials. So I've got GW inks, which are probably older than a fair chunk of our listeners. On top of the inks, I've got various GW shades. I've also got the Army Painter acrylic based washes. I've got a tin of dip that I very rarely use, but that's quite handy if you are doing a kind of a big block of zombies or something like that. So the actual wash is very much down to your personal preference, but they all tend to work the same. So next will be the highlights. The armor's all finished. The final stage, I should have mentioned, is obviously the basing. It's always worth giving it a bit of thought. Banners, faces, bases, shields, you know, they're the bits that jump out at you. So again, you can get, you know, a decent base with some, or a vibrant base or an interesting base will really kind of frame the rest of your paint job. So it's worth spending a relatively short amount of time to lift that base up from a standard kind of, you know, green rimmed old style GW base to something that really looks a little bit nicer. So in this particular case, I'm actually using Owl's Demons paint basing scheme that he kindly shared with me. And that's a sort of frozen tundra wasteland with snow and a sort of cracked ice look. It's not come out exactly as I hoped it would, because it's 10mm rather than 28mm. It doesn't look quite as good for the time I put in. I could probably skip a stage or two, but it's a relatively small project, so I might as well push through. And again, I've just got some occasional tufts with a little layer of snow on top of them that I'm adding just to add a bit of variation and a bit of difference. So yeah, base is definitely just finishing off and really making the army look coherent. So never scrimp on basing properly. And that's it, the project's finished. And by the look of it, I've just got enough time, if I rush, to join the tail of Slow Painters and get the first installment done. So I've finished this. I'm quite enthusiastic, so I'm going straight on to the next thing. Anyway, enjoy your painting. And yeah, it'll be interesting to see what everybody else is working on. Final installment is the highlights. I'm most of the way through the army now. The War Master Ogres are getting a little bit boring because I've been working on one project for a while. So I have pushed a couple of little side projects that I had on my table at the same time. So a couple of great swords for the Empire have been painted. And I've got a couple of other bits that I'll pick up as I go along. But anyway, broken the back of most of it. Just thought I'd talk a little bit about highlighting. So as I mentioned, it's been painted slightly, base coated slightly darker than mid-range. It's then been washed, or a wash has been applied, or an ink wash, or whatever. It's now about really the fun bit of the painting process, which is to highlight it back up. So I'd probably highlight with a sort of mid-range base coat, and then one or two highlights on top of that as a rank and file. If it's a particularly interesting detail, or if you want to get something that pops out, I'd just put on as many highlights as I want, just to keep on bringing it up. I've found that it's always worth putting one more highlight than you think you need on, and it just makes it pop that little bit extra, but that's the way I like to paint. It's all a matter of judgment and choice, and if you've got bored on something, just put it to one side and move on, or just call it finished. So, it's, you know, painting isn't meant to be a hassle. You're doing it for fun. So it's always worth keeping that in mind. But this is my favourite stage, because each round of highlights gets quicker than the one before. And it's only, you know, a few key highlights on each rank and file figure. And that one's done. So, yeah, it's on the finishing path now. Now, I suppose there's various approaches to highlights. I quite with rank and file, I'm quite lazy, so I don't overly thin the paints, which means the highlights are quite an abrupt transition. You know, it's a cartoony painting style I use, so it doesn't give you that smooth transition. I can do that. I have done that on characters. I'm not great at it, but you find you kind of pushing paint around the figure. It's a very different process. It can give you really good results, but it takes a lot longer than just doing stark highlights on rank and file. And for typical rank and file troops, that's exactly what I'll do. If it's a character, if it's a big monster or a centerpiece, or if it's a banner, then I think that's when you're into that much more thinner highlights, building up much slower so that you get a smooth transition. You can't see the stark application of highlights, whereas for rank and file, yeah, I'll make sure there's a definite transition between each highlight that can be seen if you really look up close, and I don't overly thin them, so I don't have to apply each highlight multiple times to build up the colour. So in short, I suppose it's a bit lazy for highlighting, but I quite like the way it looks on rank and file, and I quite like to keep going until, you know, each miniature pops in some way. So yeah, it's just the final push now, and then the project will be finished.
So then, how you been finding the VC?
Well, and I'm not sure if I mentioned it in the last episode, but yeah, I'm enjoying the struggle. I am a bit worried that I'm using it as an opportunity to learn about VC, and then I've just played one Strigoi list for two tournaments
as well,
in a row that it's not really given me a full picture of VC, especially stuff like Lamio and Nosferatu, that side of it, and a lot of the units. I used the Knight list, didn't I?
Oh, yeah. Blood Knight list. Yeah, I wrote your Blood Dragon list, didn't I?
Blood Dragon list, yeah. And that was quite fun. And then I've gone on Strigoi, which has stuck a bit more, and I'm working through that one. Now, so I'm a little bit concerned that actually my knowledge of VC are, a handful of units.
I think, though, it's more along the lines of how the VC fundamentally work, though. The fact they don't take panic and break checks and all that lot and fumble, and that's an element to the game that you're starting to experience now as a VC player, seeing the positives as well as the negatives.
I mean, did you listen to the latest Paired Weapons podcast?
I haven't listened to the recent one yet, no, because I've just got back
with
Jack from holiday. Oh, right, okay.
Looking at the...
Which Jack?
Chapman.
Chapman, okay.
Looking at the lists for the Brawl.
Oh, right.
He did comment on mine that, Varkalax are...
Awesome.
No, the opposite, rubbish.
Really?
I thought Varkalax, because you get them round, you do stuff with them. But he pointed out something, and then I thought about it, and he pointed out that they always die. And you know what? They always die. My ones always die, because, people focus on them because they can dish it out.
Do you not find, though, that they get their points back, or they're taking attention away that allows the rest of your army
they
to get
across? They take attention away, definitely.
Yeah, and they're quite...
Whether they get their points back, but I suppose part of, if they're getting that grief, then they're getting the points back. I mean, sometimes they just get a lucky fireball, it just kills them.
Yeah, that's frustrating.
Everybody's
had
that.
Was
that? But, I think maybe part of it's my play is that even once I've taken a couple of wounds, I've just got to run them away. But I don't, because I think, they're in the perfect place to put some pressure. And of course they do, and then they get
It's the Vampiric 3+ as well that I really like.
And when I remember it, I like it as well.
That's the big thing.
So I've got Vampiric 3+, but it only happens half the time.
Is that because you forget most of the time? Yep. And then, Yeah, I've also found it that when you need it, it doesn't work. But that's the same with everything, isn't it? I love Varkalax. I think they're brilliant. I think they just add so much movement to a VC list. Being vampiric and move 8/16. And the thing they do struggle with sometimes is leadership tests if they're too close to the enemy, because you get march blocked.
Yeah.
That's something that really does screw up vampires quite a lot, that people forget. Especially as the vampires only need a 9 these days. Discipline 9.
And those Varks are like discipline 7, aren't they?
Yeah, they're quite low for what they are. But it's that initial opening movement of Vanguard and then 16. It can be just, that's just game winning in some circumstances. So I really like him.
Yeah. But no, I could see where he was coming from because, you know, as Gareth killed him in my last game, I always lose them. And I think, you know, they're a really strong unit, but I always lose them. So, anyway, yeah. I think my experience is limited by the fact that I found a list I liked and I've kind of committed to it, maybe. But that's probably off the back of doing the Ocho tournament and then only having a few days before the next one. So it's not like I'd played... You know, I tweaked the list a little bit, and it was a little bit, and then I put it in for this tournament. So
it's also good, though, to play the same thing against several opponents and different armies as well.
Yeah.
Because there are good and bad matchups. I mean, if you're up against Pyro, vampires have a real hard time anyway. Well, some builds do. But yeah, by playing the same list, you get to see where its strengths and weaknesses lie. And generally, you get to see where the vampire strengths and weaknesses lie. For example, their magic, their reliance on bringing things back. The spell laws, for example, that kind of thing. How effective vampires can be in combat. How often they fluff it.
Mm. So you've carried on using demons, haven't you?
I have. And I played the solo event in which I learned that fiends desperately needed a musician, as did the succubi. And then I played the Oko tournament, in which highlighted that fiends are really, really bad and I should take hoarders.
Which you kind of knew, didn't you? You knew you should take hoarders.
I did.
But you wanted to try to do like a... bring something new to the...
I wanted to see what fiends would do, because they on paper they look really good. They look good. Yeah, they're movement 918. Obviously the entire book's swift stride, but they're swift stride. But they don't cause fear, which was something that caught me off guard. I thought they caused fear.
Oh,
initially.
Did they not?
No, they don't cause fear.
I thought,
They're AP2, which is okay, but they're only strength 4, res 4, and they've only got a 5-up save. So they actually fall over quite quickly in response to people. So generally...
Is that a 5-up save or a 5-up Aegis?
5-up Aegis. Like all demons. Well, I say like all demons. That's a lie. Not all demons are 5-up these days. Like, no. For example, Furies aren't stuff. But anyway, yeah, so... they're actually, in most games, they just bled points. And they are fast, they are scoring, but for their points, no, they've been dropped.
Yeah. Again, Pyro, it just doesn't matter how mobile you are, you can't outrun.
Well, it wasn't really... Yeah, I mean, you're right, Pyro is a problem for them. But to be honest, the kind of list I was playing was very small units all over the place. So not many points anywhere apart from, obviously, the Sentinel. I mean, even the two Hope Harvesters that I upgraded to the Monsters, they're only 405 points. So they're not massive when they go down, but rarely when they did go down, I was generally losing the game at that point. But when the Fiends went down, it wasn't that big an issue. It's just they didn't really do much in any game. I mean, their prime example was I charged them into the flank of some Feldrax, and they completely fluffed it, lost combat, and died. You know, like... Feldrax are your prime target. Go eat them. And they still can't do that. So
you say prime target, but it's the Vez 5, aren't they?
Well, they were in the flank and they're plus 1 to wound. So they're hitting on 3s, wounding on 4s, and the Feldrax have a 6-up save. But they've only got 3 attacks a base. So they just, I don't know, for me anyway, I'm bashing them. It's probably the way they didn't suit my playstyle. Let's put it that way. There are other things in the book that I think are better. I think, to be honest, they've been hit by the bash stick, and it showed. But the other thing I was trying out was witchcraft on the Sentinel, which it did look good. And when the whole army was on the table in the early stages of the game, for example, I mean, I took out Jordan Scourge, one round of shooting, bam, gone.
With
the rest of the army, because it's the witchcraft, you're looking for things like Bewitching Glare, which makes it battle focus on a unit. Yep. We're shooting, so the more shots you can pump into that unit, the more damage you're doing. But what I found the problem with witchcraft was, especially towards the latter half of the game, where a number of your units are dead or things are engaged elsewhere or whatever, there was no physical direct damage stuff. You got Raven's Wing to fly over people with, and that does D6 strength 4, but there's no actual other reach out and punch you in the face. It's all manipulating your next turn's worth of action, be it movement, shooting, whatever. So, yeah, I've decided to drop the Master on Witchcraft, and I'm taking an Adept on Witchcraft, because I'm putting the Master on Thaumaturgy, purely because I want to put comments on people's heads.
Yeah.
And reach out and hurt people. And, yeah, really, I think with demons, it's the threat of that ranged effect with the plus one to cast from the Master.
So you weren't using Hereditary for the reach, because you know you can repeat that. So if you've got multiple casters, you could have had a couple of missiles off the Hereditary.
Not a huge fan of the spear. It's okay. It's situational. It's like all things, really. But it's not bad as a damage spell, but it's not quite what I was looking for. I very rarely took it in any of my games, just because the Thaumaturgy Wizard was always taking the minus res or strength, and his other spell was either the breath or the magic missile, which I found better than the spear, because it's more versatile. And the Witchcraft was always running four spells from Witchcraft, because they're all pretty good, depending on the matchup. But the reason why I'm taking the Adept is because Raven's Wing is awesome as a spell. Deceptive Glamour is awesome as a spell and really easy to cast. And also Twisted Effigy was brilliant. It's a must-stop spell in some games, because what it does is it shuts down an entire unit from shooting at a 36-inch range. So as backup spells, they're really strong. And if you're using that in conjunction with something like Comet, or whatever it's called these days, people are going to be saving dice to stop Comet, or they're letting off these other spells that really do complement your army nicely. So that's the plan. Anyway, we'll see if it works. Oh, and I put Hoarders back in the list.
Yay.
So, and I'm going to try just out some limiters. Sorry?
Just one block of Hoarders.
Just one block, yeah. The two blocks worked, but it was too heavy on the fact of if I went into a bad matchup with the Hoarders, I went down hard. But one unit of Hoarders.
So what's
is
a bad
strong.
Matchup for Hoarders, then?
Anything with armour. Because Hoarders are AP0.
Yeah.
And there's no way to improve
their
AP.
Yeah, but you've got that volume, though, haven't you, of attacks?
You do, but if they're rolling anything but ones, you need to do six wounds, and they're only strength 4. So they can dish out a lot of damage, but what I was finding against cavalry-based armies like Kingdom of Equitaine, or I played against Jack Chapman, actually, with his Dread Elves. As soon as he knew I was playing two units of Hoarders, he played with his Dread Elves, with his cavalry list. No, I'll give him his due. He did ask me what I wanted to play against, and I told him, and then he brought that army up. I thought, oh no, this is a terrible matchup. And he ran straight over the top of me. But yeah, so armor's a real bugbear of theirs.
But isn't he playing Dread Elves in his Thundercocks tournament?
I don't know at the moment, actually. No. It's a good point. I'm not really quite sure. But yeah, armor is a Hoarder's worst nightmare. So that's where Evo potentially comes in. But I'm also thinking the Hoarders with Thaumaturgy works. So it's just how you want to run this. So yeah, I'm enjoying the demons. I will probably end up collecting a demon army at some point when the book goes solid. It's still in its beta stage, isn't it? So when they decide what to do with it, I may possibly start collecting a demon army. Depends what book drops next, really. But my ultimate goal would be to collect, when each book drops, if I've got an interest in it, like the Warriors has dropped and is now kind of set. I've got a Warriors army. I'd like a demon army, and then probably a Dread Elf army when that comes out. ID still don't really appeal to me. They're dwarves. Although they're not quite as bad as normal dwarves, but they're still dwarves.
Hmm.
I don't know. How have you found playing against the ID recently? You've had a couple of games against them, haven't you?
I've had one game against them. And, yeah.
Oh, yeah, we avoided you. But yeah, that's right. I was meant to play in the Oko, but I kept pairing you out of dwarves because they've got pyro.
Yes. And that was my experience.
It burns.
You know, it's difficult when you have a first game against a new book. You know, it's very difficult to... It takes more than one game to get a feel for Red Army, doesn't it?
Yeah. What kind of units was he using? And what were your initial opinions in?
I think it was 3 or 4 units of Blunderbuss.
Oh, how did you find that? Well, because they've kind of got like an area effect now, haven't they?
Yes.
Did it work better?
It's 2 wide, 1 deep, isn't it? It's quite interesting. I think when there's a decent salvo, there's a decent salvo. I think, but they are only strength 3, aren't they? So it's not.
Yeah, shrapnel. It's intended to shred low armor save, low res units.
Yeah,
like elves.
Yeah, elves is probably brilliant against, but you know, against me, it was a game of not dreading, because I was quite excited to get the first tournament in a game, but I was looking at it going, this ain't a good match for me. He had a Torok Commissioner with like a volcanic embrace sword. I forget what it's called. Sword of the Yeast or something, I think it was.
Oh, okay.
Which means he does like a 2d3 flaming volcanic embrace on top of his normal.
That sounds horrible.
So, and I think he normally did like d3 for his volcanic embrace. And then he has his attacks. I just say, going, well, that ain't great. That ain't great. Oh, and you know what? It wasn't. That anointed unit, I didn't really have an answer to. And that's a problem. But everything else, again, the Infernal Engines as well. I think they were reasonable. But the real cock-up was me. Because I, in the last turn of the game, charged one in the rear with a Varkalak, thinking, he's probably not going to kill me. I might get a wound, or I might not. But even then, it's charge and rear. So I've already got 3 res. You know, it's the last turn of the game, the last dice. I can break him, run him down.
Yeah, you've got no risk to your Varkalak, really, have you?
So, he killed him outright. But also, of course, the Infernal Engine's unbreakable. So a plan with only 2 flaws. And I think he had like 5 wounds left. I've only got 5 attacks. Wounded him on, you know, 4s. And he's got a decent save. So it was never going to happen. I think I did 1 wound. And he did 4 back to me.
Oh. Oh dear.
So.
Live and learn, mate. Live and learn.
Yeah, but... I found it quite an interesting book. It was good to get a game against them because it meant I, you know, had a look through and started looking at the units. So, yeah, thumbs up.
This is the thing. It's only when playing against it and with it, isn't it? You realise where the strengths and weaknesses lie of the book. It's very easy to start forming opinions of something until you've played with it.
Yeah. I mean, because it looks amazing. Everything looks great. You know, a lot of their units have so many rules interacting, and you just go, oh, God, they do everything. But then when they deploy, you think, oh, well, there's not massive units, you know, and not a huge number. So I think that's the thing. It's a small elite army.
Hmm. Which is what the fluff's kind of rotating around, isn't it?
But given I had no armour and regen on my characters and the Varkalax, not a great combo.
No, it's generally a bad matchup for you, isn't it? Anything with flaming pyro, that kind of level of shootiness that ignores your regen hurts. So. Fair enough, mate. Okay, well, I think it's been a good episode. Thanks very much.
We'll have to get more, because that way you can... we'll get your army broken between us.
That's it. We've done quite well so far, what do you reckon? A third of it? Polyfilled and put on bases. I think I'm running out of things in my box. I've got 8 units now of Graveguard. 7, because I've done 1. And 2 units of Flyers. And then everything's on bases, which is a good start. Oh, apart from the characters, but they don't count. I want to do those differently. But no, good progress, considering I've done nothing since lockdown. All sorted. So I think next one we're going to try and get the lads on for an Occo special, aren't we? An Occo special, where we're going to talk about what it's like to play in a team environment.
I've got a proper game booked against Mark.
Ooh. What, actual toy soldiers on tables?
Yeah, over his house.
Oh, very nice. Okay. When's that?
It's in three Saturdays' time.
Oh, okay. That should be good. What are you going to take?
I don't know. I haven't even thought about it. But you give him a buzz, mate.
Can't play virtual anymore.
Yeah. No, I know.
You have to take some real stuff.
Yeah. It won't be Empire. Like I said, I've done a number of tournaments. Well, I did Scotland with Empire and all the games before it with Empire. So I've kind of done that bug for a while. Something I go back to every couple of years and play.
It's like your penance, isn't it?
And then think, oh, right, I've done my time now. Time for...
I've been playing with the filth for too long. Undying Dynasties go back in the box just as they get nerfed and the Empire come out. I know your game.
Yeah. Well, it was toying with getting the Undying Dynasties out again. But, it's an army I've got quite a skewed build, so I don't know whether I think I won't go back to the same build with the almost no magic and double colossal giant. I think maybe a bit more standard build, start trying to get the magic to synergize with everything.
It's whatever goes with your playstyle, mate, I think is best. Nice thing with the Undying Dynasties, because there's quite a bit in there that's good if you play it right and play it well.
Well, I mean, I love the chariots. And I love that kind of
really
aggressive,
solid core.
Aggressive style. So it's kind of building upon that.
Yeah, the gun line's relatively good, but it has taken a pounding in the recent update. And also, it's boring to play.
Well, I don't know. I mean, let's not forget.
Sorry, boys play against.
Winning's fun.
Oh, yeah, I agree with that. But the gun line sitting back, making people walk to you. Ugh. But then that's what you were doing with Empire, wasn't it, really? So.
Well, yeah, but I managed to make that work by having fun with an Inquisitor.
That's true. It was fun for your opponent until they realised how they worked.
Yeah. I think if you're going to play a gun line, you've got to make it interesting. Now, maybe just shooting stuff is interesting, but I never do. I always get bored, and then by a third game, just run everything out of the box at people, which is great for a gun line.
Yep. What you got to do is corner. Charge! Oh, so many games I've heard woes. What I should have done is sat in the corner and shot him. But what I did was charge him turn two.
Nobody expects the crossbow charge.
Oh dear, nobody expects five dice spells coming from your wizard. Oh, yeah. Oh dear, mate. Okay, so Undying Dynasties next. So
maybe UD for a couple of games.
Yeah.
Now they're not the filth.
And now people won't judge you for using
maybe
them.
No. Have a slightly less, slightly more bent list. See if I can hone it a bit.
Sounds like a plan, mate.
But still go for what I like rather than what's great.
So not that we're promising anything, but the last episode came out in May. This is now August, so November?
Well, then we'd have to do November and December.
Oh, that's true. We need to do our Christmas special.
We always do a Christmas one.
With our secret/Santa.
Yeah. Did you, because we bought each other a figure last year, didn't we? You bought me a witch hunter.
I did.
What did I buy you? Did you paint it? damn it, I can't remember. I'll find out.
What did you get me? I got you Witch Hunter because you asked for it. No, I got you an Inquisitor. Inquisitor. It was an Inquisitor on foot, wasn't it?
It was an Avatar, yeah.
No, you got me contrast paints, mate.
Oh, yeah. Well, you've used one of them.
I have used the red. I have not used the brown yet, but that will be used. I went out and bought the bone one. And I have the green one, which I will also use.
Jolly good.
So yeah, that's what I got. Contrast paints, my friend. I remember. I'm thankful for the gifts I'm given. So yes, anyway. Love you and leave you.
See you all next episode. Goodbye from me.
I was going to say, just before we say that, a Facebook group has grown slightly.
Oh, you're just leaving me hanging.
Two new members.
I've got my arm up for a high five. I should probably...
Thing is, I dropped off Facebook, so I don't even know. Have we got two new members?
Yeah, two new members. I've started to approve them now that you made me admin.
Oh, yeah, sorry.
Very generous of you.
Well, I left Facebook. Well, I haven't left Facebook.
You're back now.
Yeah, it's kind of... I never deleted
it. Nice new profile picture as well.
Oh, yeah, that's because I had to do something on Facebook. I had to go back on.
Why?
I can't remember. I had to join something.
It was work-related why you came off anyway, wasn't it?
Yeah, well...
Senior management.
Well, it wasn't just that, but everything on there was a bit negative and skewed. Wasn't reflective of life, I thought. So,
yeah, the banes of Facebook and...
Toxic environment, to be honest. It only ever feeds you either very happy stuff or very sad stuff, but...
Do you want to know a trick?
What's that?
Only look at the groups that you've joined. I don't bother looking at the main feed.
Yeah, but they feed adverts and crap on all the time, don't they?
I've got a couple of good T-shirts out of that, but otherwise, yeah. I just don't really look at the feed. I just go on the groups. Warmaster Revolution have got a group, for those of you who are interested. There's a Warmaster group, which is very good, very active, over 1,000 members. Ninth Age Community, there's a UK-based one. There's a hobby-based one, isn't there? Naturist. Yes, I'm on that one all the time, mate. And then there's a hobby-based focused one, and then there's also a just general Ninth Age Facebook group as well, which is pretty good for inspiration and what's going on in the hobby and people playing games and stuff, which is good. That's what I'm on Facebook for. But anyway, we've got a Facebook group, Fantasy Wargaming Podcast. Just apply, I'll say yes because we're desperate for members. Twitter at the God Bold,
at Tony Hale. Yeah, I still go on there. I don't post much. I'm a bit rubbish.
No, I watch stuff and I like stuff and comment on stuff when I see it. But usually I comment and post stuff when I'm at a tournament or doing a big project like this one. Might put this on Twitter. Might put this on our Facebook group. Be the first post for a while. But anyway, that's how to contact us. So without further ado, it's goodbye from him.
It's goodbye from me.
Adios. A really bad one. I'm warning you, it's a daddy's joke. What do you call an alligator detective?
I don't know.
An investigator.
Oh, God.
Warned you.